Mr. James Craig, Real Fire. Now, what happened there? Do any other recollections of these Mediterranean exercises in the spring of, I think, 1930?
The two fleets, the home fleet and the Mediterranean fleet, used to meet in the spring, round about February time. February, March time, and all gather in Gibraltar. And I really thought the first time I saw it, it was a magnificent sight, all the two fleets together with battleships and aircraft carriers and cruisers and destroyers, all assembled together in Gibraltar Harbour. In fact, there were so many ships, quite a lot of the cruisers and things had to anchor in the bay outside. Yeah. Not only did you have gunnery exercises and exercises on damage control and various things, but you had sort of regatta races, sailing and boat pulling and rowing and together, and football matches ashore in gym.
The regatta, did you take any part in that? Or
yes, I always did. I was always very interested in sailing and rowing. Mostly I did sailing, dinghy sailing, and also I did quite a bit of rowing in gigs and whalers. And
what was the regatta, what were the races like? Tell us a bit about it.
Oh, the race, in the whaler races. The thing about these regattas, you started training, you knew they were coming, you started training months beforehand. You got off about half an hour before everybody else and went off and did a bit of practice. Then after everybody had packed up in the afternoon for tea at 4 o'clock, you went out and did a bit more practice, you know. Must have been mad, you know, given every day, you know, early morning before and then after work, you spent all this time. The gigs and the whalers, the races were about 3 miles, and of course, unlike the modern racing craft, the sliding seats and all that, you didn't have any of that, you know. So you got a bit of a sore bum to start with, you know. It was quite hard work, but very enjoyable. And having done it once and been in the in a gig or a whaler's crew for the regatta, I always took an interest, and I said, I'm not doing it again, I'm not doing it again, you know. as each regatta came up, I always put my name forward and went again, you know. But it was very enjoyable, yeah. And of course, not only did they have them in the Mediterranean, they had them in the home fleet. At any time any ships were together, they had regattas. And then there was a big annual regatta, and that was usually in Portland. Portland, when the fleet gathered in Portland, because the ship spent quite a lot of time there. Yeah.
So, what? Anything else happened during those Mediterranean exercises? The combined fleet Mediterranean exercises?
No. It was all pretty straightforward. You went there for a few weeks, and as I say, we went to visited various ports. We visited the North African ports, Iran and Algiers, Tangiers, Malta we went to.
What was it like for you as a young lad visiting all these places? Because, I mean,
it was marvellous. It was marvellous as a young man seeing all these places, because in those days, before modern day travel, you didn't go to those places, you know. Very exceptional, you know. Your holidays before the war was gone to the seaside. I think when I was at home, we used to go to down the Ayrshire coast, Aberdeen sometimes, and round that coast up there. But the thought of going abroad was way out of your reach. And going to all these places were very exciting, you know. You used to listen to the old sailors telling you about, when they get to so-and-so, you know, there's all these girls and places to go and everything, you know. And you used to look forward to going.
And you got ashore?
Oh, yes. As a boy seaman, you were very restricted in the time you could spend ashore. you got 3 afternoons a week where you could go, Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday. And you were allowed ashore from the time you finished at lunchtime until 7 o'clock in the evening. So they looked after your welfare and didn't let you roam around, you know. Yeah.
Now, anything else happening during this time, during in the Mediterranean?
No, nothing particular sticks in my mind.
You'd be there about a month, would you? Or?
Yes, you'd be there for a few weeks, yeah. Be there for a few weeks.
And so what happened next? What's the next thing you recall?
Well, after the spring cruise, as they called it, and we came back to home waters and our base, which was Plymouth, the ship I was on at the time, back to our home base in Plymouth. You had Eurish to leave, which was a sort of set pattern. You had a couple of weeks Easter leave, so off you went on Easter leave. When you came back, they did the summer cruise, which was more or less the same as the Mediterranean cruise, but you visited different ports. You'd go to Milford Haven and Weymouth.
It was round England.
Round England, round Britain anyway, around Britain, and various places to exercise. When you got to these ports, it was a showing the flag type of thing.
Now, what was showing the flag?
Well, they used to get, and you'd open the ship to visitors, and you'd have all the visitors coming from the shore and being shown around the ship, and that was in, used to get loads of people. You know, you get to a place like Weymouth in the summer, which was a holiday place, packed with people, and you get all these pedal steamers coming out with all the people aboard and trawling all over the ship and being shown round, you know.
Could they go all over the ship? I mean, were the places restricted? I mean, were they allowed in the turrets?
Yes, they were, actually. Yes, they could have a look in the turrets, and they were shown round the messes and the various places in the ship, you know.
What about magazines?
No. The certain places were off limits, you know. But they were shown pretty well all over the ship. We used to get detailed off as guides for them, you know, as a party of, you know, 10 or a dozen came aboard to say, well, you take that lot. And you had a route which you took them round the ship, you know, and you showed them where the anchors and cables were and the sea boats, and showed them a 15-inch turret and took them another walk round all the various parts of the ship.
And they were interested?
Oh, yes, indeed. Very interested, yeah. The Navy was held in quite high regard by the civilian population, and it was a very popular outing because I suppose it didn't cost anything apart from the fare coming out on the paddle steamer or boat or whatever. Now, that went on, actually, apart from the war years, both pre-war and post-war, the same sort of thing happened.
So that was a summer cruise. How long would that last for?
The summer cruise would last, you'd be at sea quite a bit, actually. You'd go for combined exercises up to in the garden and up to Scapaflow, and there'd be combined exercises there. We used to spend quite a long time in Portland doing exercise. We were more or less continually doing exercises.
During the summer cruise?
Yes.
Anything else about, so that'd be pretty well it, would it? What about the end of the, that's right across the whole summer, so.
Yes. Interspersed with being back in your base and ammunitioning and storing ship and the various things that you had to do and the usual upkeep of the ship, the cleaning and the painting and chipping rust and polishing brass and, you know, burnishing your gun and all the other things, you know. It was quite a busy life, really. And a lot of the exercises, not only gunnery exercises, we had damage control exercises and collision exercises and all sorts of things, just in case anything went wrong in the ship.
Do you remember much about the damage control side of things? I mean, you were only a boy at the time.
But in fact, you had a pretty thorough training and all these sorts of things in seamanship and boat handling drill and damage control parties and that, you know.
Can you talk a bit about damage control parties? And what would they do on a big ship like the Royal Oak?
The Royal Oak, they had a thing called the collision mat, which was a huge thing, like a big carpet, you know, with very thick fibres on one side. And the idea was, if you got a hole punched in the side of the ship, you put this mat over to cover the hole, you know. But of course, to get the mat over and get it tight over the hole, you had to run ropes underneath the ship and up the other side to hold it tight, you know. And that used to be good fun, trying to get all these ropes over, you know. That was part of damage control, and then they were shoring up bulkheads, and you know, pretending that.
Now, how would you do that?
Large bulks of timber, which they used, and put them between the two sections that needed shoring up, and then sticking wedges in to tighten them up. That was quite interesting. It was quite interesting, actually.
What about fire? You know, and that side of it.
Oh yes, we did a bit of firefighting, and he had a firefighting school at one of the naval depots. I don't remember where it was now. Can't remember. Firefighting school, where they used to show how to put out oil fires and that type of thing, and then they also. Stuck you in a smoke-filled chamber and you had to find your way out, you know, in the dark. That was interesting as well. Yeah. Yeah.
So what would happen next in your year? We're sort of looking at the year's routine.
You go around in the summer cruise, you'd visit all these holiday resorts, interspersed with going out on gunnery exercise and things. Usually for those, we went up to Invergordon or Scapaflow or to Rosyth, which was quite good because I lived not far from Rosyth, and at the weekend I could get the bus down and go home, you know. I remember standing on the deck of the Royal Oak as we went underneath the fourth bridge, they had the exercise of dropping the top mast down so it wouldn't hit the bridge. You had a very tall mainmast on those old battleships, and you had to strike top mast, which was a job in itself, you know. And of course, this didn't happen very often, and usually the people that did it were a bit rusty, you know, usually a bit of cursing and swearing, and before they eventually got the top mast down, they struck it down so we could get under the bridge, and then you'd just stand there, look up, see how much it cleared by. Yes, I like going to the sign. That was interesting.
What else? So, what would happen next in the year?
After the summer cruise, then of course you got to your to August, and in August you went on your summer leave. You had three periods of leave during the year: Easter, summer leave, and Christmas or New Year, and you got a couple of weeks each time, which was quite good, really. Yeah. The only problem was when you were a boy seaman, you were all right because you got your rail fare paid. Once you became an ordinary seaman, an able seaman, you had to pay your own rail fare. And of course, being in Plymouth Depot and living up in Scotland, it was quite expensive, you know, so you had to do a bit of saving up for that. Yeah.
So after the summer leave?
After the summer leave, you went back to the usual routine. From what I remember, most of the autumn part of the year, you still carried on with exercises and things, but it was mostly to do with ship maintenance. You'd spend time in dockyard, you know. And
what type of exercise then?
Well, the usual things at sea, manoeuvres, gunnery practices, gunnery shoots. Used to do things called range and inclination exercises. Various things.
And in between, you'd go in for maintenance?
Yeah. It was mostly getting the ship itself up to standard, you know. Always work to be done in the ship. Always plenty of painting. Painting the ship side used to be one of the most monotonous jobs, you know. You had a sort of grey paint and acres of ship side to paint, you know. It was a bit of a monotonous job, that, really.
How was it actually done? I mean, the painting ship.
Oh, you started at... over the side, they put a plank of wood secured with a lanyard at each end. And you got over the side onto this, two of you usually, onto the one, a stage they called it, onto the stage. And two fellas up top, as you painted, and they'd lower the stage down and you'd paint a bit more. And then they'd lower the stage down a bit further until you got to the bottom. When you got to the bottom, they used to take you off in a boat and bring you around, save you climbing up over the fresh paint. In fact, in the warmer places, in the Mediterranean, if you were doing it there, you just leapt off the stage and swam round to the gangway. And that was good fun. There were not many jobs like that in Civvy Street.
Period of maintaining ship, exercises, painting ship, then what? What's next in the end of the year? Getting towards the end of the year now?
Yes. That's about it, really. Carried on. And, of course, as a boy seaman, you were under training all the time on the ship. You were back at school, learning seamanship, the rules of the road, taken away for boat handling and rope work and wire work and splicing and also they looked after your welfare by giving you loads of physical training and used to actually organise excursions for you ashore to various places to visit, you know, places of interest when you went there. And they used to run these trips for you at weekend and that sort of thing. So I think they looked after, as a boy seaman, they looked after your welfare pretty good. And they made sure you didn't get into any trouble because they didn't let you show for very long.
So that takes us through a year, really. Yeah, you know, that takes us through to 1939.
Yeah, you
know.
Yeah.
Now, what about 1939? You just start again, I mean, I presume.
Well, of course, in 1939, there had been a fleet review, a mobilisation, more or less, in 1938. There was a bit of a panic on, but that subsided.
Now, the same thing happened.
Yes, yes.
Because we missed that out. Tell us about the mobilisation.
Well,
that would be in September 1938.
Yes, they had a sort of a fleet review, and they called up all the... pensioners and reservists and everything to man the ships. And of course the panic died down a bit and
what was it like when all the old reserves, did you get any coming aboard the Royal?
Oh yes we did,
how did they fit in?
It was all right, they were all people who had been in the Navy, but of course we pulled the lug a bit because they said, you're coming here and you're saying, you know, you're all £5 a week men according to you, you know, since you left the Navy, they all reckoned they'd got good jobs and everything, you know. Yeah, yeah. But we got on all right with them, you know. Yeah, yeah.
And so, into 1939, what happened in 1939?
Actually, when we called these reservists up, we then have a chap, he was reputed to be a member of the IRA. And when we went to abroad on the spring cruise, he had purchased somewhere a revolver. And he was taking this back to Ireland with him, you know. But how they found out, I don't know. But it was, I was in the locker room one day when half a dozen Marines with thick bayonets came down and surrounded this chap's locker, opened it, took all the stuff out and found this revolver. Somebody must have, you know, somebody must have snitched on the thing. And so that was him hauled away. Yeah, that was amazing, that, really.
Was he a boy seaman? Or
oh, no. No, he wasn't a boy seaman, no. No.
So, well, were you still a boy seaman in 39? I've tried to work it out.
No. In the beginning of 39, I got made up to ordinary seaman.
Now, what difference did that make?
Well, first of all, you left the boys' mess deck, where you were under fairly close supervision all the time, and I went into the, being a member of the forecastle party, I went up into the seaman's mess, the forecastle division, seaman's mess. More or less there, you left to your own devices. You still come under the rules, of course, of the ship and the routine of the ship, but outside working hours, you're pretty well left to your own devices. Your pay goes up. Your pay goes up to ordinary seaman, 14 shillings a week. It was. Not only that, your leave expended when you were an ordinary seaman. You were allowed to go ashore until 11 o'clock at night.
And what was the seaman's mess like? Was it pretty well the same as the boys' mess?
Oh, yes. All the messes, all the seamen, stokers and communication messes, they all lived in broadside messes. Yeah. Much the same as they did on HMS Victory, without the guns in between. But split into compartments, the seamen's mess deck, the forecastle seamen's mess deck, had about four tables in it, with about a dozen to 18 seamen in the mess deck. Each of the four messes had a leading seaman in charge, and that was it, really. Yeah.
And did your duties change much when you became when you became an ordinary seaman? Or were you still doing the job on the range finding?
Oh, yes. Gunnery-wise, you still did the same job because you were moving up the ladder step by step as you did that, and you became more experienced in that particular field. Although you hadn't specialised, when you became an ordinary seaman, then you got the opportunity to specialise in the various branches of the Navy. In fact, during the summer of 1939, a notice did go up for asking for volunteers for the Fleet Air Arm, for TAGs, telegraphist air gunners, and observers, and that type of thing. So that was one.
Did you think of volunteering for that? Or
No, I didn't. A few of the chaps did, but I didn't.
So you were in the gunnery
division? I was in the gunnery division. In the gunnery division, you qualified either in the quarters ratings, that's people who laid and trained the guns and were the actual physically loaded the guns and used those, or you could be an AA rating. There you specialised in anti-aircraft guns and anti-aircraft fire, or like me, you could go into the I was a range taker, which became a control rating, and you did the control part of the gunnery. Yeah, and that was interesting. that all these things meant different courses, you know.
What else were you learning in gunnery control? I mean, we talked a bit about the range, you know, the range and the optics.
Yeah,
what else was there in gunnery control?
Quite a lot, really. There's the range and inclination to be taken into consideration. The different types of fire that they use, anti-aircraft fire, barrage fire, I can't really think, basically, of anything else much.
That's okay. So you were going to be a gunnery control rating. That's
yeah,
what you were.
Yeah.
Now, so what happened next then? What's the next thing you remember?
Well, of course, in the summer of 1939, we knew something was going to happen because they brought our leave forward by a few weeks. Instead of having to wait till August for your summer leave, we got it in beginning of July or something. So we got early leave. In the meantime, in July, I'd left the Royal Oak.
Now, why had you left?
Well, she'd come to the end of the commission. The ships did a commission of a couple of years, 2.5 years actually, a commission was, whether at home or abroad. The commission was 2.5 years. At the end of that time, the ship paid off and the new crew took over. And the Royal Oak actually went from being a Plymouth depot ship to a Portsmouth depot ship. So the people from Portsmouth took over and crewed it. It was fortunate, really, because it was on the Royal Oak for 18 months. About 18 months, I left in July. She got sunk in October. Yeah. So it's a good job. The commission had ended in Jane because it was a bad thing, that one.
In case we forget, how did you feel when you heard about the news of this? I mean, it wasn't the crew you'd been with. It was a new crew. But how did you feel when you heard the Royal Oak had been sunk?
Well, it takes a bit of believing. When you're on the battleship, when you're on these big ships, you couldn't envisage a thing sinking, really, you know. And yet, when you look back at history, the First World War and everything, it did happen, you know. The ships did sink. But when you were serving on these big ships, you couldn't really envisage a thing sinking, you know. And I was shocked, really, to know. And then when we found out there was 800 odd men had been drowned or killed, you know, when the ship sank, it was it was a bit upsetting, really. And I didn't think at the time, oh, that might happen to me, because you don't think these things, do you? But it was something else that happened. It was shocking, that.